Good morning. You are in the session on implementation of the ACA around California, and I'm going to make some comments, and Beth Abbott also about national implications. The ACA, whether Romney's elected or not, whatever happens to the Senate, the toothpaste is out of the tube. And a lot of states are going forward. California, I think, is set. Anthony will be able to give you a better fix on that. But I think that a number of states, obviously Massachusetts has gone forward, and there are other states that are set one way or the other, Connecticut, Maryland, Oregon. Whatever happens at the national level, the train is on the tracks. And then, of course, Obama could win, in which case... Okay. Well, it's. I saw Rachel Maddow last week on the Letterman show, and I was in New York, and so they asked her, well, what is going to happen? And she said it's tied. She said you can make really good arguments either way about every poll in a swing state as to how right or wrong it is, and we just have to assume it's tied as of right now. So, but either way. Healthcare reform is on the tracks, and we're not going back. So today's presentations, first we're going to have Beth Abbott, and I will go second. Anthony Wright, who is in the building, will be back at the table shortly, will be going last. So Beth Abbott is the Director of Consumer Advocacy for Health Access. That is the preeminent organization in the state of California representing the cause of access to health care in this state. They have been around for many, many years and are the go-to 25th anniversary, and they're the go-to organization in California easily if your issue is health access. That's the name. So, Beth is both the Director of Administrative Advocacy at Health Access and, for the purposes of this talk, is also a consumer representative with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. This is the national entity that coordinates insurance commissioners, and Beth is an advocate there. I will add, as I've been told, that none of us have conflicts of interest here personally with what we're about to say. So, Beth, it's your show.
Good morning, everybody. I'm really pleased to be here and get to talk to all of you, and I hope that you will have some questions and that we can have a discussion. This is the part I say that's free because my boss will be in the room in a minute, and then I have to sort of stick to my talking points. So, oh, shoot.
Oh, you went too fast?
I did.
Okay.
How do I go back?
I don't know. I think we go to this one. Oh, no, it's not going to. We're going to fly through this and then come back. There we are.
That one.
So you just hit that one.
I have light bulbs changed for me at my house, and that's why. I'm going to talk a little bit about the consumer protections that are in the Affordable Care Act, which I would imagine if you're at this session, you care about that. How many people in this room before this minute have heard of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners? Oh, my goodness, this is a bright group. All right. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to get caught up on this. It is a voluntary association of all of the insurance commissioners in the country and in the territories, and they have existed since 1871. They are very interested in preserving the right of state regulation of insurance. There hasn't been, until the Affordable Care Act, a responsibility of the federal government to regulate insurance. So this is a change. And one of the main things that they're called the NAIC, that they do is they write laws for state legislators so that rather when a law is passed, particularly a federal law, they can just lift the language out of the NAIC, introduce it into their legislature, and be sure that they're in compliance with federal law, which is no small task. Since the Affordable Care Act, which is also called usually by its detractors as Obamacare, the NAIC has assumed greater prominence because in the Affordable Care Act itself, 11 times within the Affordable Care Act, there are responsibilities specifically given to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. And so, that includes things such as the NAIC will make recommendations regarding X, and the Secretary of HHS will review that and, in fact, implement that. The early history of the NAIC is a completely industry-dominated organization, like many of the trade association groups that there are. There are 28 people who are designated as consumer representatives, and I'm one of them. You have to apply and go through a whole big hoo-ha to get picked. It doesn't involve any salary, but they do enable you to attend the meeting. They have 3 or 4 meetings a year where they discuss policy issues, and you're allowed to attend, and they reimburse you for your travel there. But there is no stipend or support of your salary, and it takes a lot of time. I tell people, and this is actually true, people think I'm kidding, but I say I work part-time for Health Access, and I work full-time for the NAIC, and that's not an exaggeration. In 1992, the NAIC actually established a consumer participation program and set aside 4 positions to have consumer representatives because they wanted some balance to the industry presence there, and it certainly was needed balance. And now they have increased it with the coincidence of the Affordable Care Act because there's such an emphasis where consumer voices need to be heard. There are people who are, I do health work with the NAIC and on my job with Health Access, but there are people who are property, casualty, life, long-term care, automobile insurance, and work on those topics from a consumer perspective. About a third of them are from law schools. About a third of them are from national disease-based advocacy groups like American Cancer Society and American Heart Association. And about a third of them are from state-based groups like Health Access. I understand this is, we might be have some people from outside California who are at this meeting, but I listed in the last bullet what states the consumer representatives are from. And part of what our responsibility if we're selected is that we have to provide advice and counsel when asked to the consumer, to the insurance commissioner or consumer groups in your state. So if in fact you are interested, if there's somebody listed from your state here, or you're interested in having somebody give a consumer perspective on a task force for your insurance commissioner, that's what we're supposed to do, and we do that within reason. Because of our small number, I frequently say that we are outnumbered but not outclassed. So we try and be tasteful, but we are pretty assertive in this group. There were, at the last meeting in Atlanta, there were 2,191 people representing the industry there. And then there were like 23 of us there. So it's not exactly a fair fight. But we speak out and are very strongly lobbying in favor of positions that represent consumers. The NAIC is a very hidebound organization, very hierarchical. Everything goes through committees up to a vote, and every one of the commissioners votes on all their important topics. So what we have to do is pretend like we're lobbyists and try and get people to vote for the consumer-based position. And they are not necessarily things that people are automatically disposed to. And we have to call up these insurance commissioners, some of whom are elected, some of whom are appointed, and talk to them about why they should be in favor of X position. And that's hard. I've talked to, like, the insurance commissioner in Alabama. Anybody here from Alabama? I talked to the insurance commissioner from Alabama, very nice man, and talked to him about an issue. And it really is hard for me to make a case. I'm a California girl. Really hard for me to make a case for him necessarily to vote for something. It's a very conservative state. I don't have such a hard time with Illinois and New York and Washington and Maryland and like that. Here's some of the things that we have participated in that were really important. There is I don't know if any of you have ever heard this word before. It makes very, very good cocktail party chatter. My husband, who's not in healthcare, uses it all the time. People, I was very impressed. It's the medical loss ratio, MLR, for short. And that is the shorthand term that refers to the fact that insurance companies, and many of them have not been doing this, spend 80% or 85%, depending on the definition of the kind of market they operate in, they spend 80% of the premiums they collect on actual health care. Now, who would have thought that that was an amazing thing for them to do? 20% can be spent on administrative expenses and other things like the CEO's salary, marketing, outreach efforts, and profits to their shareholders. And there were a number of calls over a 7-month period, several a week, 2 and 3 hours each time. And the insurance companies talked about how they could not possibly meet the medical loss ratio of 80%. How could you expect us to spend 80% of the money we collect on health care for our enrollees? It's kind of hard to answer that when you think about it. Wouldn't you think that would be sort of like what they would be doing? We lobbied hard on this and did so based on a public policy perspective. And it passed. And it resulted in one of the most significant implementation pieces of the Affordable Care Act. And it was touch and go. And it was a real victory. Got lots of press. And what that meant, you saw the manifestation of that earlier this year. Insurance companies who were not able to meet that 80% rule had to give rebates to consumers based on their premiums. And it was a force to drive down the cost of premiums. In other words, so that insurance companies, if they didn't take in quite as much money, it would be easier for them to meet that 80% threshold. And if they didn't meet it because they miscalculated or didn't wanna or whatever, they had to refund part of the premiums to their consumer enrollees. And that was a little bit embarrassing and financially hard to explain to their shareholders. And so that was it was probably the biggest victory that we achieved, and it was hard. Another one, yeah. What percentage of premiums were? Well, that's not something you necessarily know because insurance companies don't tell you. But when I was on calls, and there's like typically 650 industry representatives on calls and 3 or 4 of us on calls, and some of the insurance companies said, well, you know, our medical loss ratio runs, we're close to 50% or we're close to 60%. But that was quite a disclosure because most of them don't want anybody to know that, because maybe their investors would think that was good. But if you were somebody who was purchasing a policy, you would not be impressed if such a small percentage was spent on your actual care, like doctor visits, labs, hospitals. Another thing we did that I think was a huge accomplishment. Typically, if you get your insurance through your employer or you buy an individual or small group policy, you get a copy of your health insurance policy. Typically, not all of them, but many of them exceed 100 pages. And nobody, I mean, even the most dedicated among you might not read that cover to cover. And if you had to, because you had injury and you were unclear about exactly what your policy would cover, you would start sorting through it and it would be very difficult. People also don't know, this is probably a very important subset of the general public, in that you all have an interest in healthcare and that kind of stuff, but people don't know the difference between deductibles, coinsurance, copays. That all kind of mushes together in their minds, so they don't know what they're talking about. So the NAIC developed, this was part of the Affordable Care Act, a prototype of what a consumer disclosure notice would look like. And it had to be no more than 4 pages and include examples. And the examples we used were someone who had cancer and someone who had a baby. And what particular expenses the insurance policy would have to pay for. And people didn't understand that. They don't realize what their out-of-pocket expenses are. So this went into effect September 23rd of this year, and it was a knockdown, drag-out fight with the industry. There were 2 consumer reps who were on that group, and there were about 25 insurance company representatives, and that was just a bloodbath. I think there's a distinct possibility that many insurers don't really want people to know what's covered and what's not covered. So that is something that you'll all start to see, and your employers will start to see, and your associations will start to see, is this new Consumer Disclosure Act notice. Another big fight, and this is the last one I'll talk about, was this is very clear that the Affordable Care Act said that brokers and agents' fees were an administrative expense. They didn't outlaw them. It was very much up to the insurance company if they wanted to pay brokers, who are in essence the sales force for insurance companies often. And often for small businesses or many individuals, having a broker there to kind of hold your hand and talk you through the provisions of the healthcare. I think many of us think that's a really important service. But whether or not that counts as actual medical care, the same as a lab fee or a hospital stay, Congress said it does not. So the brokers and agents were furious about this. And they wanted it to be deemed a medical expense. And so they asked for the medical loss ratio, which we previously talked about, to be revised, the definition, so that brokers and agents' fees would be counted as a medical cost. And there was a vote on that, and we won on that also. So it is not counted presently. It may still be redefined by the Republican Congress, not sure what will happen on that, but at the NAIC it was not revised. There's a lot of things we're still working on that are important to make insurance run better in your states. One of them is market reviews, where your insurance commissioner goes into an insurance company's office and looks at their record of grievances and appeals and looks at their prompt payment. Do they pay both consumers and providers quickly? Are they responsive? Is their advertising reputable? And when they find that it is not, there can be both administrative remedies and sanctions. And sometimes these the reviews done by insurance regulators in the states is sort of perfunctory, limited, very pro forma. So we're working to make that a more pro-consumer evaluation of how insurance companies work. Many of you who own a home have an insurance policy to protect your home in case of floods and earthquakes and hurricanes and like that. Typically, in that marketplace, you can't see what that policy looks like until you buy it. And so we're taking the very extraordinary position that you should be able to see what that policy looks like before you lay down your hard-earned cash. We're also trying to make sure that state regulators and insurance companies also track complaints. Most insurance companies do a pretty good job, insurance regulators do a pretty good job of tracking consumer complaints, but and resolving them and get some redress for the consumer, but they often don't track those. If you get 1,000 complaints, if you're in the Department of Insurance and 900 of them are for XYZ insurance company, that would sort of tell you that they've got some poor practices, anti-consumer practices in place. So we're trying to help insurance regulators do a better job of tracking complaints. Here's what I think you should take away from this. Stay informed. This is really important. Health insurance. The rules are changing. And you should find somebody. I am sort of partial to our health access website. You can sign up. We've got a lot of stuff where we are giving you easily digestible pieces of what's happening and what it means. It's pretty factual. We do have a blog also that has some opinions. But we have a lot of good information. We have a huge readership. And we're statewide, a lot of places who are advocacy organizations from other states subscribe to our website. We're celebrating our 25th year this year, and we're really proud of our organization. I haven't been with it forever, but my boss is here, and I'd say that whether he's here or not. If you want to know about what's going on at the NAIC, their website is naic.org, and you can look up to see. I brought the list of who the consumer reps are. If any of you want to know who the person is in your state, I'd be glad to talk to you afterwards. And if you have some questions you think I might be able to help with, I'm pleased to help you. And this is my address and phone number and email. And there'll be some time for questions at the end. So thank you very much.